Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, this is an emotional day.
Yeah, it is.
This is an emotional day. So our topic today is hits and flops.
Mm-hmm.
And for a chef...
Yeah, that's pretty emotional something that does very, very well makes you feel so amazingly good. You know, that's obviously what we strive for with everything that we do. And, you know, when guests really, really love something or want to, you know you're going to have to do it again, when you do a daily menu, you know, you could just do it once and never do it again. But when there's a demand for something.
Or you could do something like the Cornmeal Fried Oysters at Charleston.
For the last 24 years.
And at Savannah before that. Mm-hmm. And at Georgia Brown's before that. And have to do it.
Forever, apparently.
Yeah, it's time to make the donuts. Time to make the oysters. You know?
Right.
Well, but, I mean, they're amazing.
Yeah, and Julian and I were talking about that.
That's the dumbest thing. It's like, and still, 24 years later, I tell, go to Charleston, go to the bar.
Get the oysters. Yeah, cornmeal fried oysters. Yeah, well, you know, I think I finally got over being tired of making them when we renovated the restaurant because I really wanted to take them off the menu at that time because it was the appropriate time to make a change like that. And I've gotten over that. It's like, you know what? People, and I think as you mature as a chef, too.
They have feelings
It's
about
a process,
it.
Yeah.
And your guests have feelings
and it's not
about it.
It's never about the chef. It's always about the guest. And so, therefore, that's why you do something for 24 years or 22 years, whatever it's been. Right. So, yeah.
So, do you want to ask me first, or do you want me to ask
sure,
you first?
Sure, go ahead. No. Okay. So, Tony, what's something that you've done that you thought was a hit?
We're talking about, it's funny, we're talking about this, and there are two dishes that are neck that we did, and I thought both were going to be amazing, and I thought
made
from necks, right? So this is one, and they were both at Pazzo back in the day,
mm-hmm.
and one was a veal neck. It was a braised veal neck, braised in cider. It was a reduction sauce with the stock from that,
mm-hmm.
and the stock from the veal, and the cider. And a pumpkin puree, like a little spiced, like cardamom and cayenne pumpkin puree.
Yeah.
Was crazy, like
very it was delicious.
It was delicious.
It was delicious. Well, neck is a great cut. I mean, it's a great cut to braise.
And you just say braised veal, and I was smart enough not to say neck on the menu at that moment in time. How would you like some neck, lady, you know?
Yeah, right. So unappealing.
You know, I've been thinking like about neck all day long.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, but it was like, braised veal with spices and pumpkin, you know, cider braised veal with spices and pumpkin, boom. And it was an easy thing to come up with. It was an easy thing to do. Prep wasn't impossible. It was super easy to put out in service. And, you know, you'd have a night where you put out 80 tapa of that dish. It was just like, oh. And I thought it was really good, but I didn't think it was like, you know, manna, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a cool thing.
That's a good thing, yeah.
And then a few years later, we were starting to get really good Berkshire pigs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Really good Berkshire pork. And I'd gotten a sample of a neck from a Berkshire pork, which had this marvelous flavor to it and great fat. And we like smoked it a little bit on the wood grill and we braised it. And then on pickup, like you get it crispy again, you know, and you rest it and you cut these nice slices. And we laid it out on plate with, it was like a sweet onion and like lima bean and corn business and a little bit of a vinegar sauce with chilies and caper berries. And it was, I mean, Mary and I were standing there eating it. We're thinking, we're just geniuses. This is the best thing in the history of food. And people are going to love this. And they're going to applaud when they get the dish.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd sell two.
Wow.
And Mary and I would eat the heck out of it. But we tried, and then we tried it the next week with different garnishes and, like, everyone likes everything with potatoes. We did it with potatoes. We'd like...
Just didn't work. Yeah. That's pork, always interesting.
Pork neck, no.
Yeah, you never know.
Berkshire pork, not saying neck. I think they already knew. I don't know what it was.
They were...
We should never have said neck.
Okay, right.
But that totally different dishes and totally different moments in time.
That's interesting.
But, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't in my heart think that the pork might have been better, but it wasn't better to the hundreds and thousands of people that ate...
Right.
The one dish and the seven people that had the pork seemed to like it very much.
Mm-hmm. So that's your hit and miss.
That's pretty interesting,
especially since it is the same
place,
same sort of cut
and
everything,
I mean,
but different product.
You know.
Yeah.
But it was funny. I think the earliest self-congratulations might have doomed the pork neck. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. So how about you? You have a long history of getting reaction from guests for food. So you want to start positive? You want to start negative?
I think negative. You know, go ahead.
That's where perfectionist starts.
I think that really in the end, there's some ingredients that people just aren't turned on by. So you can do something like, I know at one point I put braised collard greens on a beef tenderloin dish. And I mean, we can sell beef tenderloin like it's going out of style. But when I put collard greens and Hoppingjohn, which had black eyed peas in it, so it seems like there was a period of time where the death of a dish was the combination of collard greens and or beans. And it's just kind of an interesting thing as a chef to have been cooking professionally for over 30 years to see how food and the way people perceive it and enjoy it and, you know, just the whole evolution of food over the last 30 years.
People have a lot of feelings about that stuff.
And I mean, even 5 years ago, if I had just put a vegetable plate on the menu, it wouldn't have sold. I would have sold zero. I mean, or maybe one if a vegetarian came in. So it's amazing now. You know, we do a couple of different vegetable dishes. So that I would say that would be a hit for us, which is we do a lot of work with fresh artichokes, and I make a soup that is inspired by Guy Savoy's famous dish, which is a fresh artichoke soup with Reggiano cheese and black truffle. And because of that, you have byproduct. And of course, we have the artichoke bottoms, and we do a vegetable plate with artichokes and a little bit of fresh bitter greens and beurre blanc and arugula oil. And then it often has roasted cipollini onions or some other accompaniment to it. But it's always all about vegetables.
Yeah, you've always seen it with favas before.
Mm-hmm. And now we do Brussels sprouts and roasted beets and baby multicolored carrots and all these dishes with vegetables. And we will sell 25, 30 of those in a night, whereas before it would have been one. So when you talk about, you know, flops or hits, it's really based on what the public wants.
Well, the movement and the culture, yeah. The movement and what they have an interest in.
I remember the first time I put rabbit on. I guess I'm combining my conversation as hits and flops all into one.
Because the things are really close. That's the
right
thing.
Is it
because you walk in, like, you kind of have your heart in the dish.
Oh, I always have my heart in the dish. Absolutely.
And you walk in and you go out there, you're like,
you're all excited about it.
I think you're going to care about this. I think you're going to like it. And then there's the night when you have the one that's a runaway and you're like, well, I really cared about that dish, but, you know, it's like, I thought he was cute, but I didn't think he was that cute.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of, but when you have a dish, it's like, well, I thought he was really cute, but apparently no one else seems to think so, you know?
I think that's what happened with the rabbit the first time I did it. You know, we could not sell it. I braised it. And, you know, I think we ended up eating it for employee meal. It was a sad situation. I mean, again, as you say, you put your heart and soul into any dish that's braised or confit. I mean, it's a process and it takes time and you have to have a great stock when you braise a dish. And, I mean, we couldn't. And it wasn't around Easter time, which I have made that mistake before, forgetting what time of the year it is and putting Easter.
I always jokingly say to chefs to put rabbits on
on
Easter menus.
Right.
And then one year, Julian did.
That was gosh.
Sold great.
You don't think about it sometimes.
It's sold great.
Yeah, we get wrapped up in the product and we don't always consider the calendar year. But yeah, and I think one of the things that also surprised me that was so popular, and again to this day, almost like the oysters has remained popular, are the fried green tomato sandwich, which, you know, okay, it has crab and lobster on it, which is not a big surprise.
I remember you doing that. That was like a quickie, like on the fly. I'm not going to say throwaway, but it was like a, I've got this and this and this. I need a new dish for these guys. I'm putting this together. Mm-hmm. See you later.
Mm-hmm. And people request it.
And you get good response.
Yeah, I never would have thought people would be like, oh my gosh. You know, and it's lump crab, lobster, brunoise, which is the smallest of dice, a Yukon gold potato that you just blanch off. And I saute everything with just a tiny bit of finely chopped onion.
So it's almost like a hash.
It is. We call it lobster and crab hash. And a little bit of, just a tiny bit of mild curry, salt and pepper. And then that hash goes in between the layers of fried green tomato. We put a little bit of Upland Cress. We used to put watercress in there, but we put Upland Cress in now. Lemon cayenne mayonnaise. And that's the dish. And it's a stack of two fried green tomatoes with two layers of the hash. And I would never have thought that would be just like people were blown away by it. And I think also the dish that surprised, well, there's some recognition with the Bocuse dish that I do, which I do now every January. after having eaten there a couple of years ago. We were on a trip there with staff, and that was one of the greatest eating experiences of my life. And I've always admired Bocuse, and obviously, as he is one of the greatest living chefs. And he has a dish that he did for the French president that's a truffle and foie gras broth, and has aromatics, mirepoix, and you put the broth in a lion's head tureen dish, and you cover it with puff pastry and bake it in the oven. And it's just one of the most beautiful things when you cut that puff pastry open and you get all the aromatics from the truffle and that inherent, you know, bouquet from, or, you know, beauty or perfume from the mirepoix, and the smell of the foie gras. And people, I mean, really embraced it. And I guess I also didn't realize that people would know what the dish was. And that's really exciting when someone was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're preparing this. And then I've executed to the best of my ability and get a lot of appreciation for it. That was something that I was very proud to get to do and have people be excited about it.
Just thinking about dishes you've done over the years, I'm going to blast from the past.
Okay.
I'm going to be a negative guy first.
Yeah.
The
am I going to laugh?
The collard greens at George
Brown's. Oh, the undercooked ones. Oh, yeah, that was definitely a flop. That was probably the biggest flop ever.
Cindy Lou's avant-garde collard greens.
So this is 1993 at Georgia Brown's in D.C.
Less, so there'll be much more vitamins for you.
I was trying.
And the crowd said,
no, these are gross. Oh, I mean, the Washington Post wrote an article about that.
It was great. It was great.
Vernon Jordan was in the dining room having lunch, and he was like, I need to see the chef who made these collard greens.
Look, he cursed me out first. Okay?
Oh, my gosh. I went out to the table, and the first thing he said to me was, you're way too thin. And I was thin then. I'm not anymore. I wish I could get away with this now. But he was like, you're too thin to be a chef. And he said something about his mother being a caterer in Atlanta, I think, if I remember correctly. And he said, you do not know how to make collard greens. And I'm like, I was just trying to make them a little bit healthier instead of cooking them for 4 hours. But yeah.
And I remember out of respect for your desire to do that, I'm like, we can put them on two ways.
Right.
We can put them on, you know, sort of like,
what do we call them? The new greens? Or
the new greens and down home style.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it was pretty much a 95-5 vote, <yeah. laughs> based on the operating system for the restaurant's orders. You know, for every 95 orders of down home greens, that people would take a shot at about five.
I imagine the five people that had the undercooked greens had probably never had collard greens before in their life, so they didn't know.
I expect that digestive health is fantastic.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, even the Charleston newspaper wrote an article about that because they caught up with the Washington Post.
There was one in Louisiana. And it,
oh boy!
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, I was young.
that was a fun one. The other one.
Oh boy.
The other one, and it's something I love. Mm. And I never remember you putting this on a dish that anyone ever really wanted, bought, or rebought.
Oh, jeez.
Was dirty rice.
Oh, no.
I love dirty rice.
Oh, my gosh, me too.
I love dirty rice. And maybe it's the kind of thing you could do again one day, you know, because people are more into organ meats now and all that kind of stuff.
But
back in the day, that was a dish killer.
And just when that is what it's called. So, I mean, at that time,
that
I was doing Southern.
That sounds pretty upscale.
Well, I was doing traditional low country cooking. I was trying to preserve the history of Southern cooking in the low country area, being a part of that. And I wanted to call things what they were called for, you know, over 100 years. And there is nothing else you can call dirty rice but dirty rice. And of course, that's not appealing. But man, when you taste it, it's seriously good. Actually, when you talk about flops, chicken livers are the kiss of death. I mean,
unless you love them, you hate them, and everyone who likes them.
Right. Yep. And if you don't love them, then if you haven't ever eaten them, you're scared to death of them, apparently. So the only
person I ever saw at George Brown's eat my, like, I had two favorite lunches there. One was a corn chowder that you made there. They carried forward many years and was definitely a hit. Mm-hmm. And the other was to get a plate of Hoppin' John and to get a plate of the cornmeal fried chicken livers with the andouille sausage gravy.
Yum.
The day Marion Barry got out of prison, he ordered my lunch. He ordered.
Wow.
He came in by himself. He worked the room because that's what he would do.
Uh-huh.
Sat down, looked at the menu, and he gestured me. He wouldn't talk to the waiter. He gestured me over, and he's like, I want chicken livers. I want Hoppin' John.
Okay.
I heard the collard greens are terrible.
Oh, gee. I eventually made very good collard greens.
You made
there.
Great
I
collard greens.
Just like to say
you
that.
Made great collard
when
greens.
I started cooking them for a couple of hours.
The nouvelle greens were
the
more challenging.
Were yeah. A little hard.
No question. Well, when we come back on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine, we have a series of interviews with other chefs who have hits and flops and feelings about them and mm-hmm. some stories to tell.
Yeah.
All of that and more on Formula Wolf on WIPR.